Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're going to be away from the radio dial, you can always stay up to date with everything happening here at the station. All you got to do is download the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen anytime, anywhere, on demand. Just search for the Odyssey app in your app store. Download and start listening today. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is on each and every Thursday, writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. He's on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, Jeffrey. We are well on our way to 82-0.
You can't win the first day. You can't win all 82 till you win the first one.
That's right. Encouraging start from our Memphis Grizzlies there last night.
So we will start with that. Wanted to get Cobb's thoughts on the Grizzlies last night as the Grizzlies knock off Utah. By the way, I'm pretty sure Utah just played the last 6 seconds to cover. Markkanen hits the three, and then they like kind of took a swipe at the first attempt to foul, but then they never really did after that. They just let the Grizzlies dribble it out.
What are you doing? Like that game was not over. Like NBA games, well, there's a lot that can play out in 6 seconds, right? Like there was very little effort, a concerning lack of effort to foul. I'm not mad about it. It worked out for the Grizzlies, but no, I'd be mad about it if I was a Jazz fan.
No, I think Will Hardy was mad about it. Because if you saw, I think Hardy and Jenkins are fairly friendly.
And, oh, yeah, they gave each other that like big like bro hug.
Yeah,
after they, like,
but
there was something going on there.
At the end of the game, you could tell Hardy was just like fuming. And I assumed that was based on that. Because there were 6 seconds left, right? When they hit, or was it? I felt like there was at least 6 seconds when they took the shot, but there was still
the
plenty of time.
Inbounded with like 4 seconds left. So, I mean, you foul, they split the free throws. You got a chance to tie the game. Also, there were just some weird things in that game last night. Did you see in the first half where they went to the monitor to review the contact between Keontae George and Taylor Jenkins as if there had been some sort of hostile act between Taylor and Keontae George, and they were at the monitor coming out of one of those TV timeouts for like another additional couple of minutes, and they literally had just brushed shoulders, if that. And it was like, did they say something to each other? Because I can't in any scenario imagine Taylor Jenkins like talking garbage to an opposing player.
So now that you mention it, I remember that, but like it wasn't something I was like focused on in real time. But speaking of other things you don't normally see, I'm pretty sure I saw this. So, spirit of full disclosure, I was cooking dinner after putting my daughter down right when you do the switch from the pregame show to the, you know, the first 7 minutes of the broadcast where they do the starting lineups before they tip it off. So they came back from commercial and they're showing like the Grizzlies huddle slash like getting done with the starting lineups. And I'm pretty sure I saw Taylor Jenkins and Ja do the Ja dance together. Like right when the game started. And I need someone.
New year, new Taylor.
Well, the problem is, I've already off YouTube TV. I'm done. I'm out. Last night.
Oh, buddy.
Well, last night solidified it because, so I was wondering this for you. You get league pass, but in Murfreesboro, are you still considered in market?
Well, first off, Jeffrey,
or whatever, Springfield. Springfield, sorry, beg your pardon.
It's the county seat of Robertson County.
Of course, how could I forget? I apologize to all the listeners.
The capital of Dark Fire Tobacco. So a lot of history here.
Dark Fire?
Dark Fire Tobacco, yes.
Is that a brand or is that a type of tobacco?
It's a type of tobacco. So it's the tobacco that they export to Eastern Europe. It's some of the strongest tobacco in the world. And so if you drive, especially this time of year, around upper middle Tennessee, you're liable to see smoking barns. And that is actually not barns that are on fire. It's barns that are curing tobacco.
Okay.
So here in these parts, when you have league pass, you don't get to pick which broadcast team you listen to. So I was listening to Craig Bowlerjack in the Jazz last night, and they were just, boy, talking about how great Walker Kessler was, and they were thinking that Taylor Jenkins might have been throwing an elbow at Keontae George on the sideline. So I didn't get to hear Pete and Brevin and what they were saying about the game. So I was kind of watching it from the opposing team's point of view, and that was insightful in some ways, but in other ways, you know, I missed BK, I missed Pete.
But you don't get Grizzlies games blocked out. So, like, for instance, if we ordered League Pass yesterday, because this was the only option for Grizzlies games, was to, on YouTube TV, excuse me, the only option was to order League Pass, but the Grizzlies, both the Utah broadcast or the Grizzlies broadcast would have been blocked out. And so I was like, I'm done. I think my wife and I have agreed that maybe the best course of action is I might call for a second technician to come out and see. Mm-hmm. But I started DirecTV Stream last night. It's still not right. I still don't have a remote, but at least I have the channel lineup back to where I'm used to be. And so
Okay. Now
we had, I don't know, you clearly had no issues because you're watching League Pass. There were a lot of local people with issues, in particular Comcast subscribers. So my mom calls me right before the game, and she's like, hey, is your screen messed up too? And I was like, well, I just put Josephine to bed. I was like, I've been scrambling. I have the game on upstairs, but I'm downstairs right now. I don't know. So I was like, I don't have the screen in front of me. And apparently, because then I had one of my high school buddies asking if we were having issues. And I was like, do you have Comcast? He's like, yeah. So apparently Comcast subscribers had big time problems, at least early in the game. I think it cleared up as the game went on. The screen was entirely pixelated. Nobody
well, shoot,
knew.
It's now FanDuel TV. Or whatever anyway.
And I don't know who tried the app. Like, I don't know if this is still the same Bally Sports app, like, that's been rebranded. So, for instance, yes, we all know that it has a new name. It's FanDuel Network TV or whatever. I got to give shout-outs to Pete. I know you didn't get to hear it. Pete didn't miss a beat. I mean, the guy's such a pro. Ready to
such
go. Like, FanDuel, whatever it's like, FanDuel, or see it live on FanDuel Grizzlies or whatever it was. Did not even stumble for a second. It's like, I would have been tripping over my feet. I mean, I still will sometimes on Owls games say WMC or 790 WMC or where, but now it's 790 the bet. And so, like, I'll still, like, trip over that. And it's like,
well, shoot, man, we've been watching Grizzlies games. We've been watching them since they were showing the reruns on PAX Channel 50 back in.
Can't sleep on 50. So we went 50 and then Fox Sports Net, right? It's always been on a regional affiliate after PAX. You're right. God, PAX 50. That's where I came sprinting in to go watch the Beat LA chance from the Pyramid.
Yeah, right. So, you know, if the Grizzlies weren't on, you got Touched by an Angel and Diagnosis Murder. But if the Grizzlies were on, you know, it was a good night.
I feel like, did we get some Seventh Heaven reruns there too?
Yeah, that would be on brand. But the programs that I remember the most, because PAX was one of those few where, like, my parents were, like, totally cool with whatever was on there. You know, you didn't have to check to make sure it was going to be family friendly. So, yeah, we got big into Diagnosis Murder. Mm. And then Touched by an Angel was on there. There was one, I think it was called, like, It's a Miracle or something.
A lot of divine intervention.
Yeah, you're catching a theme there. Yeah. Diagnosis Murder got a little racy sometimes, you know, a little dicey there. But the Grizzlies games on PAX, they were perfect.
So I don't know when everyone's going, what do you mean? It's not the Bally's app. Bally's app. Diamond Sports still owns it. So what I'm unclear about is Diamond Sports third partying their app to FanDuel? Had they just taken the Bally Sports app, rebranded it, new graphics, whatever, to make it look like the FanDuel app? Or are they using, like, is FanDuel, who's basically just paid for, like, a sponsorship deal? I mean, that's basically all they're doing. Are they handling the entire broadcast? That I don't know the answer to. But I know there were lots of people that were quite pissed last night. And the other thing that you got to remember about the Comcast deal, you know, they moved it tiers. So it used to be the Grizzlies were, like, on that kind of mid-tier or, like, the standard. If you got, like, the standard Comcast package, I don't know what they call theirs, but they had to get, that was part of the whole issue with Comcast and Diamond at coming out of bankruptcy. You've had to buy the higher up package. So you have to buy, like, the premium package. And if you're sitting there and you just spend an extra, I don't know, 30, 40 bucks, and you're like, this is what we have. Like, this is just my whole deal. I've been saying this. I've been on this street for, I feel like, a decade. Yes, it is great for us as sports fans that basically if you want to watch something, there is a way to watch it. But where we are getting absolutely railroaded is it's never a user-friendly way to watch it, or it's never, oh, this is a great deal for the customer. It's like, all right, if you want to watch everything, you can spend $600 a month and you can find something. But I completely, there were people that were going nuts last night, and I was like, sometimes I'll see stuff on social media, it's like, get over it. I completely get it. Night one, you can't even get it right. Like, that to me makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, well, I got friends in Memphis who literally split a DirecTV streaming package solely for the purpose of being able to watch the Grizzlies. And it's, you know, a group of brothers or a group of friends who or whatever, and they just Venmo each other, you know, to split it up. And that's what you got to do to watch sports in this era. That's a very unfortunate. But, I mean, hey, if you did get to watch the game, you got to feel pretty good, right? You get an opening night dub on the road without Jaren Jackson Jr. John Morant looks healthy. I mean, I thought it was a... I mean, it wasn't a perfect showing. I mean, there were plenty of flaws. Zach Edey didn't look great, but all in all, they get a big dub.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I had this feeling, and it's mainly my high school group chat, that because those are mostly my Memphis friends. Everyone was kind of in agreement. Like, last night was a reminder of, God, it is just fun to watch Ja Morant. And Ja was great, but it wasn't like Ja was just... It wasn't the nights where you see Ja going for 50. It was just a masterclass of being in control, I felt like.
Yeah, I was rocking my Ja 1 trivia edition yesterday, honor and opening night. Yeah, and I love the emotion that he played with, too. That was something that really stuck out to me watching the broadcast was, man, just he makes these decisive plays and key moments, and just the way he looks up to the rafters and lets out those yells and that emotion, right? Like, because that, to me, is a sign that the joy is back, right? Like, that's the other thing with Ja, with everything he's been through, man. It's like, all right, like, you're not a robot. Like, you know... For as much as some people want to say that using mental health is just a cop out, or like that you're just playing that card, like, and in no way does having poor mental health excuse really terrible decisions,
right?
But like, let's not discount the reality of what he's been going through over these last couple of years from a health standpoint, from an off the court standpoint. And last year was a nightmare. And so to see him out there not only performing at a high level, but having that joy as he did it, that was to me the most encouraging thing about last night.
Because I think back, even forget last year, because last year we're all just trying to put it behind us. And I think we're all comfortable just acting like, yeah, if something happened, we don't talk about it. But even in the year in which they finished second in the West, they still win the division, but they get beat by the Lakers. So two seasons ago, the last full season of Ja, it just didn't look right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't. I could never tell. It's like, was he trying to play like a character of a tough guy, like whatnot? This felt like the year before, where the Grizzlies just, like, last night just felt fun. And
young, joyful Ja out there making plays to close the game. And it's all about the ball. You see him having a good time with his teammates. The thing I've always loved about the young core, and I need to stop calling it the young core, right? Because, you know, these guys are in year five for Dez, year six for Ja.
I mean, we've only got 2 years guaranteed. Like, I think Jaren's going to end up getting re-signed. That'll all get hammered out this summer, I suspect. But all that's guaranteed right now is this year and next year with Jaren, Ja, and Dez.
When you start getting into the later side of your mid-20s, you ain't young in the NBA world anymore. But they've always just had such a jovial demeanor about them when things are well and things are going well. And that seemed to come back last night like that. So that's, man, that was great to see. Again, there were plenty of concerning signs. But here, I thought this was another good kind of takeaway. All right, so there have been 20 teams. I think 20 of the NBA's teams have played so far. Of those 20, the Grizzlies rank number four in terms of three-point attempts. So they were able to get up 45 threes last night. Shot, 37.8%. I think they made 17 of them. I thought the offense looked surprisingly fluid and coherent for a new system that's being implemented this year. Like, that was a concern going into the season, especially when you're down a starter on opening night without Jaren out there. But I mean, my gosh, they looked really comfortable running that offense, and they kind of hit Utah in the face in that first half with a barrage of threes from guys that I don't think Utah was really expecting. And so, like, you get Jalen Wells knocking down threes and Jae Huff lighting it up from the outside, and it's like, all right, like, I see it. I see how this could work.
Admittedly, I didn't have the stopwatch out last night. I agree with everything you're saying, because I also felt like, just eye test anecdotally, what we saw in the preseason with the emphasis on the pace, to me, like, that was a team that was working on something to add as a tool. But I did not feel like last night the idea was get out and run at that pace again. Now, it's also possible, given the guys and the rotations, maybe you don't feel comfortable going breakneck, but I'm with you entirely. I thought the positive thing is they still get into the 120s. They used pace at times, but I didn't feel like you were watching, like, the Pacers or the Kings play. Like, I still felt like at times they were under control.
Jeffrey, I'm not so sure that Marcus Smart is ready to go at breakneck.
Yeah. I said it this morning. He looks fat. Like, he's got, like, listen, we've all been there. Guys in our 30s that maybe let themselves go a little bit. I've seen that look in his eyes. That look in his eyes. That look in his eyes is this one. I got a wedding coming up, and I haven't put that tux on in 2 years. And I got no idea, A, if the pants are going to fit, but B, I am really worried about whether or not that shirt's going to bud.
All right. Let me vouch for our guy here, for Marcus Smart. I think when you get to that age, and you're a vet, and you're on a nice deal, you just kind of let the season get you into shape, right?
No, I mean, so, this is a throwback to, like, when Shaq would always have the, like, you ain't paying me to show up in shape. Like, you know, you don't pay me in the summer. Like, I'll get in shape on your clock. And yeah, so, right, like, that's a throwback.
We don't need him putting all those miles on his knees in July and August and for September sure. Anyway. You know, let the season get him in shape.
Well, you make an interesting point here. Cam Spencer apparently got hurt going for a run. Like, that's how he twists his ankle. Maybe Marcus ahead of the curve. Like, you can't get hurt running if you don't go running.
I just think the Grizzlies need to abandon practice. Like, let's not even practice. We talk about practice with the way these guys have been getting banged up.
Isn't that what they kind of do anyway? Like,
I forget.
Like, once, you know? I feel like once the season starts, basically practice is like shoot around.
Yeah. So one time when I was on the beat, I was on the Utah trip. And Ja was coming back from injury, and we didn't get to watch all of practice, but for whatever reason, this day we were in there for the end of it. And they were playing this game called free throw distraction or whatever. Taylor had some name for it. And they were literally just doing the most absurd and, like, profane things that they could possibly conjure up to try to
distract
their teammates. Oh, miss free throws.
Psych out. Yeah. It's from basketball. The psych outs, yeah.
Yeah, at one point they built a human pyramid with Ja at the top and, like, made the guy shoot over the human pyramid.
Like,
and I'm like, Ja's coming back from injury, and we got him at the top of a human pyramid. Like NBA practices, like, what are we doing here? But it's funny because, you know, I know they get after it sometimes, but, like, with this team and with this group, like, it feels like they've got good depth. There's been a lot of injuries going around. I really do genuinely hope that they aren't going too hard in practice.
Yeah, I feel like most of the hard stuff is done in training camp. And then once they get to the season, like, they'll have times where they'll practice if there's a few days off. But, I mean, like, think about it. So Eric's not going to join it. Eric's going to join us tomorrow because he's flying. But think about it. They play last night. Today, Utah's mountain time, right? Mountain zone? Mountain time zone?
Yeah.
So they leave. Eric said they had to be at the bus at 12:15 to get on the bus to go to the airport. So you're not... I mean, I guess it's conceivable they practice when they get to Houston, but that doesn't seem likely to me. So you're probably, what, you're going to have shoot around tomorrow. You're playing at Houston. You're hopping the plane that night to come back for the home opener on Sunday, or Saturday night, I beg your pardon. Then you have Sunday off, and you've just, I doubt they do much on Sunday, and then they have a game on Monday. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like once the season starts, like, they just don't practice that much.
Well, and practice the guys who need it, too. Like,
sure.
Let's just say Zach Edey. He looks like he could use some practice, right? Because, hey, look, it was in that summer league debut against Utah and against Walker Kessler back in, I guess, July, whenever he looked awesome, and he had that tip in. If I'm remembering this correctly, I think
correct.
That was against Utah.
That was
against Kessler.
Yes. Because that was that's the other thing. Like we were, I remember it's like acting like, or I remember having the thought of, okay, summer league's usually something people will probably overanalyze, but I thought it was at least a decent test for Zach Edey to start in summer league, because you were going up against a not only a credible NBA big, but like a guy that we saw, what Kessler. I felt like Kessler was the second best player for them last night. Like Markkanen was awesome, but I thought he was the next best player.
It seemed like he remembered that summer league performance and kind of took that personal, because Edey was the best big on the floor in that summer league game. And then last night he
was
struggled.
Not.
I mean, it was an ugly debut. This is interesting though. Has Zach Edey really ever played at altitude before? You're 7 foot four. You're probably one of the absolute biggest men in the league. You're playing in a system that goes at absolute rip roaring pace, as fast as anybody in the league, faster than you've ever played in your life. I don't think that Purdue played in altitude a whole lot. And I don't know that that's been discussed. And I'm not trying to make an excuse for the guy, but if you're looking for a reason why Zach Edey was not the player last night who we saw in summer league and who we saw in preseason, that might be part of it, because Purdue is playing at a lot of sea level type of places in the Big Ten. And I guess they went out there in summer league and played an altitude in summer league, because they probably started out there in Utah for that. But, you know, they hadn't implemented the tempo. It's a different sort of intensity now in the regular season. I don't know. That might have contributed something
I'm
to it.
I'm going to say, down your point, I'm going to say probably not, because, like, I'm over at KenPom. So the elevation places are Wyoming, Air Force, Northern Arizona, Southern Utah, Colorado, Denver, obviously, New Mexico, Colorado State, Montana State, Utah, Utah State, Northern Colorado, BYU. I can't imagine that Purdue played any of those teams.
Yeah, and again, summer league, you know, they played those couple of games in Salt Lake then, so it's not, you know, the
but
first time they've ever
been.
I just
think there's such a difference. Like, it was also night one. Like, you know, to me, the moment clearly got to him a little bit. I'm not saying that's the, like, I think the other thing it's important to note is Kessler not only got the better of Edey, Kessler got the better of pretty much every big, because the Grizzlies' bigs in the interior were not good last night. Like, you had Jay Huff, who hit some big shots for them and closed out, but it wasn't like Jay Huff was doing his work in the paint.
But at the end of the day, you have a closing lineup that features your two-way big.
Yep.
And you find a way. No Jaren, no Zach, so those are your two rim protectors. Neither one of them are on the floor. Brandon Clark really doesn't play a whole lot. So you've got, I mean, let's not forget Santi Aldama, who was absolutely fan-freaking-tastic last night. But you got Jay Huff on the floor to end that game. I mean, that's a guy we were looking at a few weeks ago, and I was kind of, I mean, wondering, all right, is this guy going to make the roster? I mean, I guess, you know,
I mean, in fairness, I think the team was for a little bit.
And so, you know, you close the game with that guy on the floor and you find a way. That's great. Like, you're on one of your absolute reserve bigs and you're able to close out a team that has two really good bigs.
I'm with you, because I think the other thing that was, I thought, important along the same lines of you win without really a big playing particularly well. I mean, we can use the Huff hits some big shots, but in terms of in the paint, I mean, how often do the Grizzlies get beat that badly in the paint in the point disparity? Like, that feels like not very often. But I felt like the other thing that was important was, even 2 years ago, that's a game that this team didn't really win. And you build the big lead. Because remember that season, even though they still finished second in the West, I felt like the hallmark of that season was like, the Grizzlies build a lead, the Grizzlies blow a lead. And despite the year before them being so good in clutch situations, they really weren't good that season in clutch situations. And last night, like, the crowd kind of got into it in the second half. Markkanen was really going. You've not had a ton of success winning there. I mean, even Pete was talking about that. He's like, these two teams don't normally win at the other's place very often.
Yeah.
And I felt like down the stretch, they made way more winning plays than Utah did. And I thought that was like another, like, yes, we don't have the context of what Utah is, and Utah's expected to not be great. But at the same time, it's like, I'm looking at it from the Grizzlies' perspective, and those were things that I wanted to see. Like, you got some game pressure, you had to figure out a way to close it out, and they did.
Yeah, Utah is absolutely one of the toughest places to play in the NBA. It's the closest thing to a college basketball environment that you find in the NBA. That arena is electric, and they're kind of on top of you in a way that you don't see elsewhere in the NBA. Now, obviously, they have an NHL team out there, but for the longest time, I mean, Utah wasn't even in a power conference from the college sports side, so the Jazz were it, and that's still reflected in the way they get that support, especially on opening night. Zach Edey missed a couple of free throws and won everybody some Chick-fil-A. They seemed really fired up about that, you know. So I think the line going into it was, what, -3, you said, right?
Yeah, like, I don't know what it closed, but when I looked at it in the morning, it was 3. So maybe it closed at 2.5, maybe it closed at 3.5, but it was somewhere around. It was a one-possession game, essentially.
Yeah, but if you told me Zach Edey was going to finish with 5 points, 5 rebounds, go 1 of 5 from the free throw line and foul out in 14 minutes, and that the Grizzlies are going to win the game, I would have signed up for that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I think that's right, too. I think the other things that you could kind of take away from it, like as you mentioned, Jeff kind of dubbed Santi the Forgotten Grizz on yesterday's show. It is kind of this weird spot for Santi where he could have technically got extended this summer. Obviously, that didn't happen. There's other financial reasons for why that may not happen. But I think it's also it's important for him because it's kind of a prove-it year. And there's kind of this question of where does he fit in with this team? Because there's been times when I've thought, like, I think Santi is a guy that makes sense in the NBA, but he's kind of crowded out for the type of player that he is. But if he's going to be able to be that kind of offensive presence, it's going to be pretty tough to keep him off the floor because it just gives you another guy with length on a team that right now needs length.
Yeah, so the way I see it, he could very well be a part of your closing lineup. I'm assuming he'll be usurped in the starting lineup when Jaren Jackson Jr. returns, and that Jaren and Edey will comprise that front court. But down the stretch in games when opposing teams are going to go pick and roll hunting and they're going to try to exploit a rookie center in Zach Edey in whatever way they think they can, you could have Jaren at the 5, a more versatile sort of guy out there in Santi, and then you're able to handle those switches better. It gives you a little bit more of a here's another thing that it does for you. You can send everybody out to the perimeter on offense and let Ja go ISO if you've got Edey off the floor because he's not taking up space in the paint. So you know, maybe your best role guy isn't out there if you have Zach Edey on the bench. But I think, down the stretch in games, there's a chance we could see Santi Aldama be a part of that closing unit.
I'm obviously not freaking out also because of night one with Edey. I do think we should, you know, this isn't me making excuses. I don't want to be loser talk. But I kind of want to, like, take a look at what we saw last time because it obviously wasn't good. But I do think probably a little bit of context matters. As you mentioned, the elements is a big part of it. But number two, you know, what we've seen in the preseason, that really wasn't, like, he hadn't really played a ton with Ja. And Ja last night was running the show, as he well should have, which was awesome. But then you had, you know, then the combinations of guys that he played with, like when they kind of started working him and he started looking better, it was a little bit more with the second unit. And so then on top of that, he's had this new experience where they call fouls on him. And, you know, like having to adjust to that. Like in the back of my mind, it's like, I do understand. I think there are plenty of people, I mean, you at times, that have legitimate criticisms of Zach as a NBA guy. And I don't think that, I don't necessarily, like, I don't think it's correct. But at the same time, I'm not so steadfast as going, there's no way you're right. The problem is, like, last night's one of those nights where you kind of like, that's what people are talking about.
Well, it was just surprising because the body of work to this point has been so encouraging. From Summer League through preseason, everything that we've heard.
First preseason game wasn't great.
By and large, though, you've seen the flashes of, okay, I think this is going to work. This could be a worthwhile selection.
Yep.
Perhaps they made the right choice. And then last night, if that's all you've seen, which, like, let's be real, a lot of fans are probably not going to watch Summer League, probably not going to watch a whole lot of the preseason. You might have turned them on last night, you know, if your cable provider would let you.
Yeah, I got a note. Apparently, it never got better with Comcast. So go off, y'all. Like, I would have been screaming. I would have 100% woken up my daughter.
Yeah. So if that's the first you saw of Zach Edey, rest assured he's looked a whole lot better than that in some of these less less real circumstances, yeah. but the lights were on, and it was a real game last night. And, oh, look, he's a rookie. I will say, though, he is an old rookie. There is a difference in the NBA between the 18-year-old one-and-dones or the guys coming out of Overtime Elite or the guys coming out of G League Ignite. There's a difference between those guys and your guys like Zach who played 4 years of college basketball. So I don't think – he doesn't get a whole season of what we saw last night and get off the hook. But he can have a game like he had last night and without us throwing in the towel, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, if we get to February and this is what we're seeing, well, now we're going to have to start discussing – is the best lineup just replacing Santi. You know, putting Santi in, it's, you know, Ja, Dez, Marcus, Santi, and Jaren. Is that their best lineup? Because we've seen them play like that at times, but I'm with you. I think, though, the other thing is, I think some of the struggles are, like, easily coachable. Like, I felt like he was a little too soft at the rim, and, like, he can snap at it. It just felt like last night was the first time where he felt like he was really thinking on the floor. Like it, everything just kind of felt a little hesitant. And I think the more game reps you get, the more comfortable you get. I think he'll be better at that.
Without a doubt. I don't think there's any reason to sound the alarm bells after one game with a guy who was, you know, there were always going to be an adjustment period for Zach Edey. And I think the preseason kind of led us to believe he could take some shortcuts and that maybe that adjustment period wouldn't be too tough. But it's game one, man. He's got a lot of time to figure this thing out.
He also made a heads-up play like right when Utah started the game and started out pretty hot and the Grizzlies couldn't do anything. That was so key to miss the free throw and get the five-point possession that immediately tied the game up. Like, you can't teach that kind of headiness and awareness, like situational game awareness. That's what you're getting from Zach Edey. That's the experience. That's the four-year guy you're talking about.
Yeah, he understands the game. Also, yeah. Shout out Scottie Pippen Jr., man. Didn't even realize it until I was looking at the box score earlier. 7 assists. I mean, that's the kind of backup point guard that you need. The not quite Tyus Jones 2.0. We can't go there yet, right? Because the body of work with Tyus was so extensive. But Scottie Pippen Jr., if we're talking about guys kind of making their debuts, like, yeah, he played last year, but this is his like, hey, I'm on a real contract. I'm a part of this rotation. And I'm not on this team because everybody else is banged up. Like, he is a part of this thing now. And for him to go out and show out like he did his first night in that role, that was one of the kind of under-the-radar highlights that might get sort of crowded out on a night when Santi was great and Ja was great and, you know, there's these other things going on. But, you know, that's always been one of the questions, right? Like, the depth of this Grizzlies team and the quality of it. And one-game sample size, sure, but Scottie Pippen Jr. looked like he looked the part last night.
And that's kind of his story as a Grizzly. It's like, even since they picked him up, I'm with you. I'm not ready to say, like, oh, this guy's a starting quality point guard that's in your second unit. But what is clearly obvious to me is, okay, he belongs here. And he also probably, on night one, got the easiest basket of the year that we're going to see. Like, that was, I don't know what Bowler Jack was saying about that, but, like, we were, like, Pete and Brevin were basically, like, they didn't even get to half court. Like, they just, like, they basically just, like, it was truly, like, conceding. It was letting him score.
I almost thought he was going to give it up.
Yeah.
He ended up
get those assist numbers even higher.
Yeah, exactly. That would have gotten him to 8, which would have been ridiculous, which would have put him on that Tyus Jones assist turnover ratio type of path. But, yeah, that was the old Brevin Knight Mike Conley dunk right there.
He got over that credit card.
Yeah, he might have about maybe an inch and a half more on the bunnies than those two. But yeah, that was – I didn't know he had it in him at all, to be honest. So to see him elevate and get the dunk. Now, if Yuki Kawamura dunks, then I'll have some real questions. But yeah, Scottie was surprising too.
Have we ever had a bench guy like Yuki? Like that kind of energy. Like, I mean, that's – to me, that's like Trooper Taylor when Trooper invented the towel wave on the Tennessee sidelines. Like, Yuki, I feel like, is that big of a difference maker. I don't feel like we've had that kind of, like, true bench mob guy like we've seen with Yuki.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's fun. I used to love growing up, like, looking at Earl Boykins' stat line in the paper every morning. 5'5" out there getting buckets. It's crazy. The number of guys in the league that are under 6 feet tall has plummeted over the last, over the 21st century.
Yeah.
Because there's all this defensive versatility that's required now. And so if you're a sub 6 foot, you got to be special as a distributor, as an offensive player, as an on-ball defender, whatever. You got to have a lot going for you to make up for whatever deficiencies, you know, you're going to have on the defensive side when teams get you in the switch and whatnot. And so, I mean, it's just the fact that he even got in the league and got on that contract is that's awesome, because you don't see a whole lot of guys under 6 feet, especially that far under 6 feet, even get a chance.
All right, any other final thoughts before we take a break and do some tasting menu?
I think that covers it, man. I think it's
good just having back.
Night win.
It's just good to have him back. Like yeah. Last night was like a reminder, like, oh yeah, this can be fun, because last year was just like torture turning it on. It's like this sucks.
Yeah, and I think that the offense looking as good as it was, we didn't even really talk about Dez, like not a special night, but just a workmanlike night for Desmond Bane going out there and getting buckets and being that secondary scorer. I thought that was good. Like, that was just business as usual from him on night one. Like, if you're already at that level right out of the gate, that's really encouraging.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll set the college football tasting menu. We'll talk college football next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. My apologies. Program is brought to you by our good friends at Birdies, 493 South Main Street, Suite 101. And they want to remind you that you can get in on the holiday festivities this weekend at Birdies, because they are going to have a costume party. And you can come in for a chance to win a $100 gift card for the best costume. You can bring it on Friday night or Saturday, and our staff will judge and announce the winners on Sunday. Also, don't forget, on Saturday night, you can do karaoke night on Simulator 2 from 7 until close. They'll also be open up at 9 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday, so that you can watch all of the games, and you can do so while watching your favorite game and playing on the simulator. Don't forget about the membership options. $100 a month gets you 10 hours on the simulators, special discounts, and more. All the information at golfatbirdies.com. Also, it's Golftoberfest, so book online, and you will get half off of your standard rates. Golfatbirdies.com, at Birdies 901. All right, Cobb, let's get into the tasting menu. I think we've been talking about October is just a great month for sports in general, but this is, I feel like, when it really does peak, because there's truly something for every sports fan out there. You've got football going in full force. You've got basketball starting now. I guess really we don't have college basketball, but we'll talk about that, because CBS Sports has their preview for college basketball, so we'll get into the top players and more. We'll do that during the list. But now you've got the World Series starting tomorrow night. You're going to have basketball, NBA going, hockey's going. Like, it's all going right now. And this is kind of like when there's something to watch every single night of interest, that's when it's just the best.
Golden Bachelorette coming down to the wire. Liberty taking a loss last night.
Thank God.
Thank goodness. Hallelujah.
We're done with that one.
Don't have to pretend like Liberty is a playoff caliber team, which they have not been all year long. And not only did they lose last night, Jeffrey, they lost to Kennesaw State, which had never in its program history beaten an FBS team before. They were 0-6 this season, and yet they were able to take down the mighty Liberty Flames. So we have
it looked like a high school stadium.
Yeah, we've rid ourselves of the Liberty craze, and Jamie Chadwell probably cost himself a look at some other jobs with that loss.
All right, so tonight we've got Georgia Southern and Old Dominion for some Fun Belt, and then we have Syracuse at Pitt. Interesting game for Pitt, because this is Pitt's kind of trap spot, because Syracuse is competent and functional, but I believe Pitt has SMU next week, and I got to imagine they have their eyes on that one, because they're both going to be undefeated, likely, heading into that game. But you have that starting tonight. And then tomorrow, I mean, this is where, to me, this tomorrow night's where the 12-team playoff really is going to shine. Because in years prior, when Boise and UNLV would play on a Friday night, for people that like Mountain West football, or you like the G5, and you're just into college football, for college football junkies, that's a game that you still would have been like, that's a good game. This is now a game with legitimate stakes right now.
It is probably the first of two between these teams, potentially, because they could very well meet again in the Mountain West title game. I think for UNLV to have any shot at the playoff, or to really increase or give itself a legitimate chance without having to have a whole lot of other things go their way, I think UNLV might have to win this one because they're not going to, like, I don't know. Boise State has legitimized itself already, it feels like. And so maybe they could survive a loss here against UNLV and then beat UNLV in the Mountain West Championship game and still get in with two losses. I don't know that the UNLV is going to have that margin for error if they're a two-loss team. So I think it's a particularly huge game for UNLV. And also because, look, they had their showcase opportunity against Syracuse a few weeks back at home. They barely lost that one. I mean, you get another kind of showcase opportunity here. You want to make the most of it.
And also, I think if you're a Tiger fan, beyond just the fact that Barry Odom, you have familiarity with Barry Odom, he's head coach, I just think you're a massive UNLV fan. Because to me, Memphis still has a path to stay in front of UNLV. I'm not sure if Boise just ends up running the table the rest of the way. I don't even know if, like, even if you won out and you find yourself in the championship game, winning the championship game, I just think you really need Boise to take another L.
Yeah, I'll go so far as to say that Memphis really, to me, feels like the only team that would have a chance on a resume basis against even a two-loss Boise State team if Boise State wins the Mountain West championship. Because Navy and Army, their schedules are so, so light. They're both going to take a loss in all likelihood against Notre Dame. If somehow Memphis can get its way into the AAC championship game with one loss and win it, I think I would take Memphis with one loss as the AAC champion over a two-loss Boise State. But I'm not sure I would take a one-loss Army or a one-loss Navy over Boise State. So from that standpoint, I agree. I think Memphis is one of the few teams left out there that could potentially have a resume that's better than Boise State's.
Also on Friday night, you have Louisville at BC. That's the early game, 6:30. The Boise UNLV game's 9:30. And then at 11 p.m. Eastern, you have Rutgers going across the country to take on USC and, of course, a perennial Big Ten matchup. I mean, my thing with Rutgers right now is, like, Rutgers is just so banged up that I just don't know how credible they are. I've got my eye on USC. It doesn't seem like anyone is happy there, whether it be Lincoln Riley, whether it be USC with Lincoln Riley. I know the buyout's huge, so I'm not suggesting that he's quote-unquote on the hot seat. I would be curious to know, though, if some jobs came open, would Lincoln say, if you make me an offer, I'm willing to listen? And he kind of get everybody happy. But I don't know if that kind of job's going to open up.
I mean, for Lincoln Riley, it's always been to me an NFL job, right? Like that.
I don't know if I've ever given you this theory. I was always woke on that. Forever, when Lincoln was at Oklahoma, it's really tough to generate leverage because where are you going to go? At that point, it's like there just weren't that many jobs that were better than Oklahoma. And so you would always have to throw out the NFL as leverage to kind of get the increased buyout, to get a new deal, whatnot. I'm just not as convinced that the NFL was as wild about Lincoln Riley as the PR campaign was to build up some leverage.
Well, I'm sure that would be his ideal scenario. I think he wants that Cliff Kingsbury parachute out of a bad college situation to an NFL head coaching job that he doesn't deserve. Like that would be the best case scenario if you're Lincoln Riley. I don't think he deserves that, nor do I think his performance warrants that. It's pretty clear that he's limited in what he can do as a coach, and I honestly don't think he's a very effective leader. He gets short, he gets snappy, he doesn't seem to be composed when things aren't going his team's way, and yet like he's clearly a very one-sided type of coach. It's offense or nothing for him. And it's like, I don't think he's a very good coach. I think he inherited a good situation at Oklahoma and kept it level, but I don't think you can look at anything that Lincoln Riley has done as a head coach and say like, oh yeah, he made that situation better.
I think he had a very good job at Oklahoma. I think he also got out at a very good time because I think some of it's a little bit perception, but last week for Texas was kind of a welcome to the SEC moment where it really was, they got beat at the line of scrimmage and Texas is way more equipped to handle it right now than Oklahoma is. But I mean, Oklahoma has really struggled so far. They have offensive problems. I do think Lincoln is a good quarterbacks coach, or a good quarterback identifier. I think he runs a pretty good scheme, but I am very much in agreement in terms of he just feels like the head coach that only cares about the offense. And like every Lincoln Riley team was always just the same. And I do think this year they at least were more credible on defense, but like
started out that way for sure.
Yeah.
Have tapered off since due to injuries, due to guys opting out. They are better, though, defensively.
But I think they care about it more.
Who lost the breakup worse, Oklahoma or Lincoln Riley?
I think you have to say Oklahoma because Lincoln's still, even if it goes badly, Lincoln's still going to have like $110 million.
Yeah, that's true. Meanwhile, hey, Oklahoma got richer. They moved to the SEC.
They did get richer, but also they're probably going to have to use some of that buyout money for next year when they bid against themselves to give, which is unbelievable. We need to have our staff look like an SEC staff and pay like an SEC staff, even though they haven't been one. So let's just give them more money. It's like, okay, that's bold. All right, let's go to Saturday. We got Notre Dame Navy. Huge game, obviously, for Navy's playoff chances. Here's the thing. I'm very curious to see. We're in agreement. The best team Navy's played this year is Memphis.
Without a doubt, not even close. Yes.
I know Notre Dame is absolutely banged up to hell. Like they, I do feel like they're the team that's actually had the worst injury luck this year. But I feel like every time we get to this game, this is where we kind of get reminded, like, there's a different class of athlete at Notre Dame than there is at Navy.
That's where I'm at on this game as well. It's you look at the spread, and man, it is tempting to go Navy.
Like, oh, man, I get two touchdowns with Navy? They can score, yeah. Baby.
Yeah, and they've just run through everybody. And so you're like, what am I missing here? Well, what you're missing is kind of what you alluded to. It's outside of Memphis, their opponents have been Bucknell, Temple, UAB, Air Force, and Charlotte. One of those teams is an FCS team, and every other team I just mentioned is one of the 10 or 15 absolute worst in college football. And now you're going up against Notre Dame, which outside of that clunker against Northern Illinois has looked really good. And this is, oddly enough, one of the last, quote, marquee opportunities for Notre Dame. So Notre Dame kind of has to show up big here as well to ensure their candidacy for the playoffs. So, yeah, I kind of lean Irish.
Ole Miss, Oklahoma is interesting because we get to find out. I assume Oklahoma's going back to Jackson Arnold, right?
That's the word, yeah.
Ole Miss is in this weird spot of, okay, yes, their season's not 100% done. But, like, they are still clearly, like, hearing Kiffin talk, the way that that LSU game played out, they are not over that loss. Oklahoma does not present much of a threat at all offensively, but Venables can still scheme it up on defense. I'm more curious to see, like, what does Ole Miss look like next, or what does Ole Miss look like on Saturday? Because I think that it does have the possibility to just completely go down the tubes.
I mean, I can't imagine any scenario, right, where they lose to Oklahoma, like with this Oklahoma team being in the condition that they're in.
I mean, I think you'd have to give them two scores and then basically, like to me, like the way Oklahoma wins is it's like 17-14, but Ole Miss kind of gave them 10 points.
Yeah, right. Like turnovers, yeah. Special teams, blunders.
Sure.
Oklahoma can't score. I mean, they're completely inept on offense. I mean, their go-to receiver last week ended up being a 5'10" walk-on zero-star prospect. Like that's how disastrous it's gotten for them from a personnel standpoint. So, I mean, I'm with you. Like, how does Ole Miss look? Like, do they look like a team that's going to get off the mat and make one more run at this thing? Because that is available to them. Like,
yes.
Ole Miss, it doesn't have to be over. Like, if you beat Georgia and you take care of business the rest of the way in games that you'll likely be favored in, then you're back in it. Now, of course, like, we talked about this a little bit, but now, you know, Florida has a pulse. You still have to play Florida.
Arkansas has a pulse still, maybe.
Yeah, will you be favored in Fayetteville? That's a good question. I think that'll be determined based on how Ole Miss looks against Oklahoma.
I also think it'll be determined on how Arkansas looks tomorrow in Starkville.
True.
Which gets us to our afternoon, our middle window. So we got Illinois at Oregon, 2:30. That's the CBS game. We got BYU, I believe, as a 2.5-point dog at UCF. So that's another. We haven't quite gotten a. It's BYU's at 11. or ranked 11th. So we've already had Michigan, a top 10 team that was an underdog. We have BYU that's going to be an underdog at UCF. Missouri at Alabama. Do we know, is Cook for sure out? Because you could talk me into, we know that you can't pay attention to Kiffin's injury report. Is Drinkwitz kind of on the same tier? Because I feel like Drinkwitz is always kind of trolling too.
Yeah, well, I mean, my man came out of the hospital to finish the game last
week. Only in college
week.
Football, baby.
I guess Thamel had him as doubtful at last word. He's not batted 1,000 this year. So I guess it's kind of up in the air whether or not he plays.
The line is, for some of the line's telling me he's not playing. They've moved it up to 17.
17, yeah. Last I saw, right? Like, well, that's a lot.
Did you see Drew Pine's work last week?
What about him?
Drew Pine's,
I mean, was he that?
Yeah.
He was that bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm just ready for some of these teams to get exposed, Missouri included, right? Because they've already been exposed once against Texas A&M, yet their fans are still like, hey, why aren't we in the conversation with all these other one-loss teams? And it's like, because you are very clearly not on the same level as them. And so I want Missouri to get exposed. I'm curious to see what happens with Indiana playing without Curtis Rourke against Washington.
I got that one. I got that one on the card.
Yeah.
Indiana's my new – I remember Arizona last year. For those that tried to keep chasing and betting against Arizona – and losing money, I think Indiana's going to be my new Arizona.
You're just going to wait for them to eventually fall?
There's nothing I love more than when the clock strikes midnight on Cinderella.
Yeah, and it's going to happen because their schedule's been a joke. Now they're without their quarterback. It would be kind of funny in a sad way if it happened when ESPN College Game Day was there for like the biggest day in Indiana football history. This is a week about some of these fake teams getting exposed for me, and it starts...